week, Kicks with Bricks, the show which helps you decide if a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on or a try before you buy. Now here's your host, Barry Ricks.
Hey guys, welcome to Sweet Kicks with Bricks. I am your host, Barry Ricks, and today's Kickstarter highlight is The Carcass Exodus, and I have the mastermind behind the game. I have Jim with me. How's it going,
good,
Jim?
Good.
Good. Well, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Barry.
Yeah, I know that having a Kickstarter and making a game and everything can be pretty crazy, so I appreciate you taking time out of your crazy schedule.
Let's hope that you pay off.
There you go. Well, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself?
I'm really bad at this part, so
okay.
Let me just say that I've been in the industry a long time. I'm the least famous, longest-working, hardest-working guy in the industry.
Hey, there you go. Well, let's change that. Let's make you a little bit more famous, right? And so you are the owner and creator of Post World Games,
yes.
Correct? Awesome. And when did that start up?
3 or 4 years ago. I launched a Kickstarter for a product called King for a Day, which I didn't expect to do anything or be anything. It was just an adventure idea I had, and I just wanted to see it turned into a book for friends and for people that might like it. And that sort of blossomed into more game ideas, and before I knew it, I was a company.
That's right. You were sucked in, and now you can't go back.
Yeah. I can't do anything else either. I'm really not qualified. This or fries.
Hey, fries are good, though, you know? You got to do what you got to do sometimes. Well, your Kickstarter, I jumped upon it, and it looked awesome. And tell us what The Carcass is all about.
The Carcass is what I hope to be a unique take on not just post-apocalyptic games, but group games in particular. I'm trying to do something where the community is important, where players are building something, where the characters are involved in the community, and they're either working to make the community better or they're working to lead that community. And when they lead the community, that can have deleterious results. And so the game that I've made, in my opinion, is extremely different from what you're seeing even in the indie scene for what a role-playing game is. It is not Apocalypse World, and I'm expecting a lot of people to compare it to Apocalypse World, and it's not.
Okay. Well, so how does working in a community and leading or being a part of it, how does that work within the gameplay?
Everything that you do has lasting consequences. So when you decide that it's time to pick up the dice and make something happen, you want to make change happen of some kind, and that's what the dice represent in the game. You want to change something about the world or about your situation or whatever it is. There's 5 different charts on your character sheet, and regardless of what you roll, there is some kind of consequence, and you have to deal with those consequences. And if you play it GM-less or with a GM, you can play either way. If you play it GM-less, the person to your left is called your foil, and they're going to interpret those dice probably in the worst way that they can get away with. And if there's a game master, he or she is probably going to do the same thing. But a game master is not out to get any one specific person. The foil's out to get one specific person, and that's you. So each person has a foil, and each foil is trying to make the other person's life miserable.
Gotcha.
And so you – so, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just – no, you finish, and then my question will relate after.
You really have to – it really has to be important to you that the thing I'm doing right now, I want to change something for the better, because when you decide you want to change something for the better and then you roll really poorly, the foil is just going to make things worse instead of better. And I've heard people say, well, I don't like games where the dice determine everything. Well, if you don't like the dice not being in your favor, spend a lot of drama points so you're spending a lot of dice. That's the best advice I can give you. This is a post-apocalyptic game. It's not a unicorn game.
It's not there to be your friend.
It isn't. It's not there to be your friend. And that sounds overly pretentious, I think, on some level, but I wanted to make something different. I'm not going to use the word better. I wanted to make something different. I wanted to make something that the game felt real, and the things that you're doing Like, I keep using the word consequences, but the things that you're doing having consequences. So every chart, and I was up all last night working on the game because I got to do a play test this weekend, and I was working on all the charts, and I'm working on what the character sheets do and everything else, and I was having so much fun making sure that the consequences of each character type were different and felt different.
Yeah, and I like that. I like, because other role-playing games that I've experienced, you know, whether it be Dungeons & Dragons or something else, where it just seems like you do things, but you just sometimes, I don't know if the DM's just nice to you, depending on who he is or who she is, you know, like you don't die ever or don't have like that extreme consequence of doing everything. It's like, oh, let's just, you know, glaze over that. So I like the concept of, you know, like, oh, you did this, and now, you know, half of your village just died because of
right.
it, or you are dead, roll up a new character type of thing. So I like that, to have a little bit more extreme consequences involved with your gameplay. So it makes you, you know, strategize more. It makes you think about the choices that you're actually making rather than just be like, oh, let's just do this willy-nilly and,
right.
you know, have fun with it, which is still fun in its own aspect. But like you said, it's not necessarily better, it's just different, and I like that.
People like to throw around the word dynamic a lot when they're talking about, say, a game that has an either a logarithmic or an exponential curve to its success. And I know I'm getting a little design theory-ish there, but people use the word dynamic a lot when they're talking about game design. Dynamic can take place in two dimensions if you look at it on a graph. And that doesn't make really the game dynamic in the way we would hope a game would be dynamic. And I think in order to add that third dimension of dynamism to a game design, you need side effects or consequences. You need some sort of added effect, something that's coming into play that even if I – let's say you're playing that D&D game that you just described. I roll a D20 and I kill the dragon in one full swoop because it's the right time to roll 20. I ran a game where a guy killed a black dragon, and in the process, he was right underneath it. The acid inside of its – the sac in its neck or wherever the acid's supposed to be, I just put it there for
yeah.
the game, spilled all over him, and you know he left him with horrible scars for the rest of his adventuring career. And that's something I had to make up on the fly, and I'm just that kind of GM. But if a game had that sort of a deck or another chart or some other place where these – dynamic side effects were coming from, that even when you're succeeding well, something else might be happening as a result of what you're doing.
I like that. I love that concept of, yeah, you slayed the dragon, but there was a consequence because you were under
right.
it, slashing
right.
slashing it open. And so whether it's falling on top of you or, you know, the acid splashing on you, I like that. I could definitely get behind, you know, a DM that plays that way. The only thing I can remember in Dungeons & Dragons that was totally just random and you had to suffer the consequences is when you were playing with the deck of many things.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just right. you're like, I'm gonna draw three cards, and you had to do what the cards tell you to do, and I lost one of my favorite characters because of that dang deck.
I don't know what it is about the deck, and I don't know what it is about randomness in that regard, but we as players in this hobby, and I would say 99% of us are guilty of this, we are completely comfortable with the idea that a deck or a die can screw us over and it's okay. But as soon as
okay.
the game master does, we turn it into 1,000 memes online about how we were screwed. And the game master's not arbitrary. He's there, or she's there. He or she is there because they want that. They want to be able to touch the story and impact the story and affect the story. The die and the deck of many things doesn't give a crap about the story. It's
yeah.
just this tool that is willy-nilly, that is arbitrary, and yet we're okay with it beating us up and bending us over in these situations, and we don't complain. But if a game master does it, it's horrible. And I think the charts and Carcass make it a little more palatable because you know before you even roll the dice, you're looking at your sheet. You know what the consequences could be if you don't roll well. And you may decide at that moment, you know what, I'm not okay with members of the tribe leaving because they don't like what I'm about to do.
Yeah, no, I like that. I love that concept. So as we're recording today, you still have a good 23 days left to go on the Kickstarter,
sure.
and you are surpassed your original goal and overfunded and everything. Yeah. So congratulations. That's exciting.
Yeah, I don't know what happened this time, to be honest. I can't explain it. And so I just got lucky.
Well, it's super exciting. You're reaching to that $8,000 point and you only wanted one. So that's awesome. And you're getting close to that 200 backer range too. So that's exciting as well. So there's people out there that see this and see the wonderful potential that it can bring to their gaming experience. And so that's got to be exciting for you.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with it, honestly. I mean, I'm not used to this. I usually do small Kickstarters because I do small boutique-y kind of games. And I make what I want. My last Kickstarter was kind of weird. And so this one, I just wanted to make $1,000. The book was already done. I just needed a couple bucks for art. And now I think I'm up to, say, 20 character classes that have to go into the game because of all these stretch goals.
That's what happens with stretch goals. You get all that extra content and you're just like, now I got extra work.
Yeah, and this happened so fast, I wasn't expecting it to do this well, so now I have to think up more stretch goals. There's only so many character classes I can go into the game. It's not possible to do 500. It just isn't.
Exactly. Well, don't stretch yourself too much for the stretch goals.
Did you say that? Oh, wrong.
I know, right? I had to. It was there, and I took the opportunity for it.
That was some low-hanging fruit.
Thanks, man. Thanks. So we know that the game's – it's going to happen. It's going to come to people. So when the Kickstarter ends, when do you hope – and or, you know, of course, people, you need to understand that, you know, printing and all these things and shipping and all these other things. But when do you hope to have the game out to backers, and do you plan and want it to come to retail as well?
I actually have a retailer level on there, which I've never done before, but somebody in England really wanted that, and so I said, okay, I'll make one if you pay for the shipping. I'll make a retailer level for you. It would have to do really well for me to justify doing the minimum 1,000 order that I'd have to do through China to be able to do that. To get into distribution. I met someone from PSI recently, so it's possible that I can just get somebody to pick up all the extras so I'm not sitting on a warehouse full of stuff. And now we're talking business, boring business.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it would take to get it into every store. I know that, you know, I have local stores here that know me, and I sell them product all the time for my other games. So it'll probably be in the Tacoma, Seattle area.
There you go. When do you hope to get it to the backers?
Pretty soon, actually. The art would hold it up more than just about anything. Almost all the writing is done, and now I'm just tinkering with pagination and fixing how I'm phrasing things, adding more effects to the game. I'm still adding more effects and more character classes. So that's been fun. And then the extra decks that I'm doing as stretch goals, those would have to get made. But it'll easily be done by the end of summer, in my opinion.
Awesome. Well, that's super exciting. So, Jim, thanks for coming on the show. As we said, you know, you are a busy man. You're up all night working on the game, and that's it shows people that you're putting your hard time and effort into it. So thanks for coming on the show and taking time out of your busy schedule to tell people about
the game. Thanks for having me, Barry.
And thanks to Dan Patrice. He's Dan the Board Game Man. And you can find him at the Geek All Stars. He created our intro and outro. And just remember to always back your projects wisely.
Thanks for listening to Sweet Kicks with Bricks. If you'd like to mail the show, send any questions, comments, or interview requests to sweetkickswithbricks@gmail.com. Sweet Kicks with Bricks is a Closet Geek Studios production. For more information on the Closet Geek, please head to closetgeek.net.